Accession number 18151, Real 1.
Joe Gibbs, Real 1, where were you born, please?
I was born on the 7th of June, 1916, in Custom House, London, E16.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Custom House?
Yes, yes I did.
Where did you go to school?
I went to a school called Frederick Road School in Tidal Basin. That was E16.
Were your mother and father Londoners?
Yes, yes.
And how old were you when you left school?
14 years of age.
So 1930?
Around about that, yes.
Did you get a job?
Oh, yes. Got a job about 3 days after I left school. Actually, we was made to go to work straight away because the funds were needed indoors. Because my mother had 10 kids. And I was the youngest of 10. And we was all made to go to work to bring in what few bob we can to keep us. We lived in a four-roomed house in Young Street. And the rooms were split up. The room was for boys and that. And when it came to the push, my mother took in lodgers, which they occupied the downstairs front room. And the upstairs back room was divided by a big curtain, which one side was the boys, one side was the girls. And Mum and Dad, they had the front room upstairs.
So, what job did you get when you left school?
When I first left school, I worked in a firm called Knights's Soap Factory. And it was in there, what they call boneyard. Big tanks where all old bones were shoved in. And in hot water, and we used to have to scrape the fat off of them. So that the bones were cleared and cleaned to process the soap. And believe me, the maggots, well, and rats, is unbelievable. When we finished work in the evening, we used to go into the dressing room and change, shower and unchange our working clothes, put on our going home clothes, and I've even been sitting indoors having my tea, which wasn't a lot, might be a stew or salmon and shrimp paste, anything that Mother could provide for us. And all of a sudden there'd be a maggot crawling on me from work, you know. Well, I didn't stick that job very long. I was only there for about a month. The smell was terrible. And I left there, and I worked for a firm over at Bow called Lusty's, L-U-S-T-Y, Lusty's Lloyd Loom Firm. They used to make all this cane furniture. And it was 11 and 9 pence a week. You had to start there at 7 o'clock and finish at 5. And to get there was no transport. Because go up the Victoria Dock Road and down Berwick Road and walk along to Bow Bridge. And that was a tidy old walk. But what we used to do, we used to wait on Rance's flour lorries. They used to go there because Rance's flour mills was right opposite the factory where I worked. And when they used to turn round at Canning Town, they'd have to slow down, and all us lads used to jump on it then. And they took Brunswick Road, I beg your pardon, that was Brunswick. It used to take us down Brunswick Road onto St Leonard's Road, and we'd all jump off when it got to the factory to go and work at Lusty's. And I worked there for quite a while. A couple of years, about 18 months, I think. Then, I got a job then at Whitefields, which is at the Green Gate, working in the carpenter's shop as a boy, you know, like clearing up shavings and one thing and another like that. And I was asked then if I would like to become apprenticed. Well, I couldn't decide. I couldn't give them an answer. And so they said, you go home and I'll see your mum and dad. And asked me if they'd come and see us. Well, mum and dad came up there, signed all agreements. And then I became an apprentice to a confectionery engineer in Whitefields, which was really known as Roundtree's sweet factory. I was there for about 4 years. Then, and I left there. I was touching about 17 or 18 then. And then I got a job on a building site, knocking down buildings. And then that finished up. I worked in Tate and Lowell's then from 18 till I was 21. The Lowell's is at Plasto Wharf. Then worked different shifts there. When I became 21, I was discharged because then that when you became 21, if they couldn't find you a man's job there, you was discharged. You wasn't sacked, you was given the discharge, you know, given your cards, you're finished. In the meantime, while I was an apprentice, my dad was killed. He worked in the docks. He was killed on the 19th of December, 1932, in the Royal Group of Docks, on a ship called the steamship Devon. Well, then my brother, he took my dad's docker's brief, and he became a docker, because he was 3 years older than I. And then I and I became 21. I applied to the shipping firm down there, the New Zealand Shipping Company, and Captain White and gave me a letter, or sent a letter, to the docks, the PLA Docks Administration at London, and then I finally became a dock worker.
Which year would this have been, do you think?
Well, I was 21. I can't work that out.
Sounds like 1937 then.
Yeah, 37. That is right on the nail. Was 37.
Whereabouts did you work on the docks?
I worked in the Royal Group of Docks. New Zealand Shipping Company, Port and Dominion Line, and the Blue Star Line, the Thames Stevedore and Company. I worked there for quite a while.
What was it like being a docker in those days?
Very, very hard work and very little money. Very little money. I think our money then, when I first worked in the dock, was 10 and sixpence a day. And then we got a rise, I think it was shilling, it went up to about 11 and six or 12 bob a day. And that was hard work, very hard work.
Was there a lot of lifting and muscular work?
Oh, Christ, yes, yes. I mean, when you were loading on ships, we had no mechanical gear. The only mechanical gear we had at the time was on the quay, and they were bogies, which used to carry the cargo away. But when you were on a loading job, and you was loading 3 and 4 ton case cars, etc., etc., it was haul handwork with bars and grease, greasy dunnage, where you put grease on dunnage and bar it in. 8 men down the hold. And when you were on, I mostly worked on refrigerated cargoes. That was down Cold Hare, where all the meat was, you know, carrying meat, anything from 800 or 200 pounds, iron quarters of beef, and lambs, all refrigerated cargo. That wasn't too bad. We used to do an hour down the hold and come up, and then another four men would go. There was 8 men down the hold, you see. There were 12 men in a gang. That included 2 on the pitch, 3 on the top, and your 8 men down the hold. So we used to split it up, hour down, an hour off, hour down, an hour off. And we used to have to wear sacks around our feet, what they call bags. Well, that wasn't really to keep your feet warm. That was really to keep you the meat clean for you to when you're walking over it. When you come up out the hold, if you was going to go up off on deck, you had to take your bags off to keep the bags clean so you wouldn't dirty the meat, you know. The hind quarters and fore quarters of beef, they would have to be backed out. That was carrying on your back or carrying on your shoulder. When we first started on these little boats in the Thames stevedoring, they were very small cupboards, and you had to be shown, because I was shown by the elder dockers, how to pitch it out of the door way into the net, especially with the fore quarters, because if you didn't pitch that properly, you'd get what I call a haircut. That is that the stick at the back would hit you on the back of the head and might split your head open or knock you out or something like that, because you had to pitch it forward, you see. I carried on then.
Did you have any accidents yourself?
I did, yeah. After the war, when I went back down after the war, I had an accident. I fell through a big case. We were loading big cases. And this case, it had a brown paper top on it with strips of wood. And I fell through and I hurt my shoulder, dislocated my shoulder, which I was hospitalised. I had to go to the hospital, and I was walking about with my arm in a sling for quite a while, which has left me now with rheumatism in the shoulder.
Carry on.
And then...
But did you have any accidents before the war?
Oh, no. No, no, no. I was lucky.
Was it a young...
Oh, yes, there was a lot of accidents before the war. We used to have down at the Connaught there, where the first Albert Dock Hospital was built. That was for dockers and seamen's accidents. And that was pretty well filled up with accidents. And also, when if anybody got killed, they had their own morgue there, which they used to, if anybody got killed, they'd take them into the hospital, have a look, you know, like inspect them and that. And if they were dead, they were put in the morgue. The morgue was there. Now, that is not the old hospital that was down the bottom of Alnwick Road. This is the hospital that was in the Royal Albert Dock in 1937, and then it was shifted to Alnwick Road. And then, of course, as I say, I worked there, and then from there I got called up from the army.
Before we go on to the army, if I could ask you some more questions about the civilian dock as well. Was it really a young man's job, or would older men still be able to do
it? Oh, no. No. You relied on the older men when the younger men came in the dock in my time. As I say, 1936, 37, you relied on the older men. There was men there, 60 and over, 70. They worked till they dropped. They didn't have no retirement or anything like that. They worked till they had enough. They was finished. There was no... If they did get a pension, I think it was about, I don't know, it was about 10 bob a week. I can't say about that. I can't remember if they got a pension. I can't remember that. But no, they worked. There was elderly men there, 60 and 70, still working, not down the ship's holds, but either on the quay or on the deck doing driving work. You understand what I mean? But as I said, I relied on an old chap myself. When I first went in the dock, I went with this old chap, and he showed me how to do this and how to do that, which in time it automatically came to me. And I passed on what I learned, I passed on to many, many others of the same.
But the older men would do lighter jobs, would they?
I wouldn't say lighter jobs. They'd do a job that they could do. If a man thought he could do this job, well, he would do it. I mean, we had men on the what they call the pitch. When the meat used to come out from the ship onto the quay, there'd be a big table. And it was landed there. And you had elderly men there, right, that would be sorting out the meat there to go into different merchants' vans. And you'd have elderly men on the hand barrows willing the meat to be delivered to the vans to go to the market. Oh, no, there was some... And there were some tough old boys. Oh, yes. Really good old boys.
And were they all Londoners?
Well, no. You had anybody that could get a brief. Perhaps there'd be a bloke from... there was Irishmen in there. There was Dutchmen in there. there was all different kinds of breeds, if they were able to obtain to get a brief.
What is a brief?
A brief is a permit, right, for you, the PLA, allowing you to work in the docks for that company.
So you got a chit, did you?
Well, first of all, before my time, they had what they call a brass tally, and it had a number on it. And as you went out to, as the foreman used to call you on, you'd all stand in a line, on the stones, they called that. And the foreman used to call out the gangs, and then he'd call out men, and he'd hand in tickets. Well, after a while, that was disbanded, and we had like a book, which inside had our insurance cards, and on the front was a PLA registration, which became your registration cards. And as you walked out, so you handed your registration card to the foreman, and pardon me, he put you to work in wherever he wanted you, on the ship or on the quay, etc., etc. And then on Monday morning, every Monday morning out of your wages, no matter if it was only half a day's work, whether it was a day's work, or whether it was a week's work, your Lloyd George was stopped out of that money. We called it the Lloyd George. That was your half a crown insurance stamp. On whatever pay you drawed on a Monday, that was stopped out of it. So if you went to work for one day, the first day on a Monday, you'd get 7 and 6 or 8 bob, something like that, because the half a crown stamp's been stopped out of it.
And would you have work every day, or were you sometimes
casual work,
off?
Casual work. Sometimes we'd get a job. We'd get a job 3 days, week, whatever the job lasts. But sometimes, if you was... They had permanent men there. Now, these permanent men would naturally be put on the good jobs. And you would go aboard a ship and do all the rough work. And then when it came to the good work, you wasn't wanted. So the permanent men used to go there and take your job. Let me give you an example. For instance, if a Blue Star ship, for the Tom Stevedoring come in. Now, they used to bring in a lot of bananas and oranges, and they were in the decks. Now, on in these decks there were cupboards, and inside these cupboards was all the chilled beef. Now, you would be called on, and 12 of you would be called on, 16 hands down the hole for bananas, and you'd be down the arm at the hold, and you'd be unloading all the bananas, which was 19 shillings a day, right? Soon as you'd finished all them bananas and oranges, etc., right, you wasn't wanted. They wouldn't pick you up no more. And the permanent men would go there and do all the chilled beef, which was a good job, which you could earn £2 or £3 a day. Another example was you'd go there and work all the week. And when it comes Saturdays and Sunday, especially Sunday work, you wasn't required. The perms used to go and do all the Sunday work, the shopping orders. And then Monday morning they'd go back to their own hold, and you would get a job to go down and finish off all the rubbish, all the rough stuff. It was a cut and carve all the time.
What do you mean a cut and carve?
Well, you would do all the rough stuff, and the permanent men would do all the good stuff.
So how could you become a permanent man?
Well, you had to apply to the firm, and you had to wait and see if there's any vacancy. But we come to that later on, when we all became permanent men.
Before the war?
No. In the latter part, in the 60s and 70s.
So, and, before the war, you must have been dying to become a permanent man then?
Yes, to an extent. To an extent. And then, if we didn't go to work that day, or that week, we would go to what they call the box. It's more or less like a subsection of the labour exchange. And we'd actually go to this box. On every gate round the Royal Group of Doctors, one of these dabbing on box, what they call dabbing on. And you'd go in there with your card, and he'd stamp that, which was entitling you to draw unemployment money. So Friday nights, if you was working Monday to Thursday or Monday to Friday and you wasn't working the following week, you to go down there, produce your card, and you get paid them days that you was, which wasn't a lot. I think it was about $1 a day, half a crown. I can't really remember that now.
But before the war, didn't you want to become a permanent man?
Very hard question. Yes and no. With a permanency, it had its good points and it had its bad points. You see, with a permanency, you would be on one variety of work all the time, say like loading all the time, or on cold air like chilled beef and frozen meats and so on. But when you were a casual, you could pick what you wanted to. I mean, if I wanted to go on cold air, on chilled beef or lambs or mutton or cheese or anything like that, I would go and shape up for that section. But if I wanted to go and have a nice thawing out time, what they call thaw out after a week's work on chilled beef or cold air, I'd go and get a loading job. Or I would go and get a job on the quay to relax. Because when you've been working all the week from 8 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night carrying 200 pound iron quarters of beef or 180 pounds of iron quarters of beef, you know, as a side of a bullock or a four quarter, you know, I've come home many a time, mild shoulders, when I first started doing the job. It's like a person learning to ride a horse. When a person starting to learn to ride a horse, he gets a sore backside, right? Well, it's like you learning to carry the iron quarter of beef. And if you didn't carry it properly, you could go home with your shoulders bleeding. I mean, I've come home from work many a time and got my wife to rub me in with a drop of calomel lotion, or wear a piece of silk under your vest, you know. Because it stops it rubbing, it's made it smooth, you know what I mean? And, well...
So you were saying that it wasn't such a good thing to be a permanent man in every respect?
Well, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is it was left to a man to decide for himself.
But there were disadvantages to being a permanent
man. There was advantages and there was disadvantages, you know? But, I never ever thought about going permanent because I've got such a lot of good work. I built my reputation up in the dock. After I came out of the army, I went back in the docks with all my experience, which you see all the testimonials I got in there from the army of dock work and that. I built my reputation up that I become a crane driver. I started driving, I was a crane driver. I drove in the army. I became what they call a deckhand. That was a man on deck who drives winches and an hatchwayman. It gives them all a tip, give the crane driver the tip and the winch driver the tip what to do to hoist up and lower down different cargoes. Do you know what I mean? And I got such a good reputation with the gangs that I built around me that I used to get a lot of jobs at different firms. I mean, Port Boat, the Port and Dominion Line, Shaw Savile Line, I could always get a job there. Scruttons, they took over New Zealand and one thing and another. And my favourite firm was the Thames Stevedore and Company. I could always, if there was work available there, I could always go to work with my gang there.
Why were they your favourite?
Well, because we done good work. I mean, it's logic. If you're a superintendent and you've got a gang there that's not pulling its weight and doing a good output of cargo, you're not going to bother about, see, they get good work. You're not going to bother at all about them. They wouldn't pick you up. They wouldn't give you a job. You'd be cast aside. That's on the casual basis I'm talking now. And I built myself up with a little gang. I didn't used to worry. Well, it wasn't always work. There was times when I had to go and dab on and put our books in and get allocated to a job and all things like that. But I got a good living as a casual worker.
Now, before the war, were people in trade unions?
Oh, yeah. Strict. When I got my letter to go to Ibex House, it was called Ibex House then, and get my registration, I had to go and join the union first before I could go up there. I had to produce a union card, which I told the dockers, stevedores and dockers, Blue Union. I went there. Now, when you go there, you give the man, the doorman, the letter. Wait there, son. Also, I had a letter from my mum. And I goes up to the branch. I had to wait outside. Eventually, I were called in, and I faced the chairman, and his name is Harry Wenham, old Harry Wenham. He asked me questions, different questions, where I'd worked in my past. I told him that I was an apprentice engineer, a confectionery engineer. I worked in Tate and Lyles, I worked here and there. He said, been in prison? I said, no. Have you done this and have you done that anyway? So wait outside, and because then that is put to the committee of the branch, and all in favour of this man joining the union, they say aye. I went in and I paid my, what did I pay? I think it was a dollar then, I forget. Oh,
is that 5 shillings?
5 shillings, yeah. And because I got my union card, then my brother took me up to Ibex House. I produced the letter, I produced the union card. They wrote out all the particulars, give me my book, which is a book, and my registration. Good luck, and that's it. I come back and I started working in the docks.
So if they'd have said no to you joining the union, you wouldn't have got a job?
Oh, no, that's right. That's right. I had one other option, to join the Transport and General Workers Union. See, but if they found out that the Blue Union refused me, they're going to think twice about accepting, aren't they? So it was a little bit dodgy, but I was lucky. I was took on by the Blue Union, and I was in the Blue Union until I retired from the docks.
Which was the best union to join, the Blue Union or the T&G?
I can't answer that. My favouritism was my union, the National Dock, Stevedores and Dockers Union.
Why was it called the Blue Union?
It was the first union formed in there.
But why blue?
I can't answer that. I don't know why, because I don't know why they call us the Blue Union. I don't know if it's because it might have been one of our banners, or a banner, or a card, or something like that. It was the Stevedores and Dockers Union.
What colour was the T&G then?
White.
Why?
They were whites. We were the blues.
Why were they white?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Now, before you joined up, did you think a war was coming?
No. Good God, no.
Why not?
Up to the time, 37, when I was still working in a docks, I had a job on one occasion on the New Zealand Shipping Company boat. And it was called the Somerset. And we were unloading bombs off the ship into barges. And of course, at the time, 37,